Hey, this is Ed Ronco, host of the Up North Lowdown. We are posting this extra extended audio from our conversation with Interlochen Center for the Arts President Trey Devi about the results of an independent investigation that Interlochen commissioned. Our regular episode of the Lowdown featured about 9 minutes of this conversation. Here, we present to you the entire 20 or so minutes, edited only lightly for clarity. We should let you know this conversation talks about sexual abuse, and it might not be appropriate for all listeners. About 2 years ago, Interlochen Center for the Arts received a complaint from a former student who had attended Interlochen Arts Academy in the 1970s. She said a longtime faculty member had sexual contact with her. In response, Interlochen asked an outside law firm to conduct an investigation and gather any evidence of similar claims from other alumni. Their findings are out this week in a 97-page report that reaches back to the 1950s. It documents 70 separate accounts of sexual misconduct covering 47 faculty or staff members. None of them work for Interlochen anymore, and about a third of them have died. Interlochen, which runs a boarding high school and a summer camp for students in the arts, has made the report publicly available. IPR was given a copy in advance, and we are about to talk with the institution's president, Trey Devi. Before we do, I want to point out for our listeners that IPR is part of Interlochen, but our newsroom operates with editorial independence. Neither Mr. Devi nor any Interlochen officials have seen our questions in advance, and no senior Interlochen official will be editing any of our coverage of this story, including this interview. Trey Devi, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks for having me.
There were about 70 separate instances of sexual misconduct reported to investigators. Were you surprised at that number?
It was a sobering report. And I think we're all heartbroken by what the reports that were provided by our alumni in the course of this investigation. And so I would say that first, I'm grateful to the first alumna who came forward and shared this account. That was surprising. It was not in our records. And that set in motion to the work that has happened over the past 2 years. So this process of discovery has been difficult, but we're grateful. And I think it reinforces our commitment to candor and accountability, sharing what we learned so that our community can grow and improve from this information.
There are 47 people, including faculty, staff, donors, even an unidentified person who came onto campus, who were all found by investigators as having had inappropriate physical contact with students. And about a third of them have died in the intervening years. And I understand from our reporting and this report that you will be handing over, that you've handed over those names to the Grand Traverse County prosecutor.
Yes, we've handed over the full report as of last evening to the Grand Traverse County prosecuting attorney's office. They will share that information, as we understand it, with the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office. And the goal of that is to ensure that they can take whatever action is necessary to achieve accountability and also to ensure that individuals who are perhaps in other institutions right now are held to account. We have been in touch with the Grand Traverse County Prosecuting Attorney's Office since the beginning of this investigation. We will support their efforts in whatever way that we can.
The report does not name most of the people accused of sexual misconduct. And I want to point out that you say in a cover letter that that is in order to not interfere with any possible investigations the prosecutor might pursue. Is that correct?
That is true.
There are a few names revealed by Interlochen, though. Respondent one is identified as Byron Hansen. He worked for Interlochen for more than 50 years, including as music director at Interlochen Arts Academy, and he's accused of sexual misconduct toward a number of students, including acts at his home and in his parked car. Hansen, we know, retired in 2015 and died in 2021 at the age of 79. What does it mean that somebody who had so much power and was so celebrated was somehow also able to cause such harm.
Well, again, it's heartbreaking that any adult in a position of power and authority would abuse that trust. It brings me back to the alumna who came forward and shared a report. When that information came to my office, it was shocking. And it was the impetus to begin this because we saw no evidence of this in our files. And that led to the commissioning of the report. We, we did do include names of some individuals in our cover letter. They are deceased, and so they're not subject to any criminal proceedings. But we decided to name individuals who had multiple firsthand accounts that reflected repeated and pervasive conduct. And I think it's also important to note that we worked closely with external legal counsel that had relevant experience in this field to develop and follow a consistent and principled process governing the release of those respondent names. So that was a process that was taken carefully. But it is unfortunate that in Byron Hansen's case, that there were multiple individuals who came forward and reported misconduct. And we're deeply sorry for those experiences.
The report covers a time period from the 1950s up through the 2010s. And I imagine some people who might see the report, see that in the report, would be curious why the investigators didn't go six more years into the present day.
They had the full capacity to take the investigation wherever it led. If a report had come in more recent years, that would have been included. There was no period of time that was blacked out or in any way not subject to this investigation. They just happened to receive reports from the 1950s through the 2010s. And I think it's important to note that the number of accounts that happened prior to 2010 and after 2000, or prior to 2000 and after 2000 was quite different. There were very few reports in the investigation report after 2000. But there are a lot of things that happened in the past 25 years. Societal norms have changed. We've developed a deeper understanding of how to prevent and respond to sexual misconduct when it happens in our institutions. Laws have changed over the years, awareness, training. But I do credit my predecessor, Jeff Kimpton, who led this institution, and his administration for 14 years from 2003 to 2017. And you can see with those robust safety protocols in place that the number of reports diminished. So we're, it's on us, and we have continued to build on the systems in place so that we can continue to improve for our students. And this is work that will continue. We'll continue to build out the systems, the processes, the procedures, the technological supports, the culture, everything that's required to make sure that the students can come here and they can be safe and protected, because that is the foundation for their artistic, academic, and emotional wellness. They will thrive here if they're safe. Safety is the foundation.
I have a couple more questions before I get to this, but I do want to talk about Interlochen today and into the future for sure. One more on this. Have there been allegations made against faculty or staff since 2020? And what has happened in those instances?
Yeah, so there's two really important things to understand. One is that the systems available and the avenues to make reports are clear and they're visible. And someone can make a report right now directly to a counselor or a faculty member or a school leader or the health services or the safety team. So they can do that with a trusted adult, but they can also do it anonymously through our systems. And so they've got a concern and they're sensitive to any issues around expressing that, they can do it anonymously and they can bypass the administration entirely through Michigan's OK to Say program. So there are these avenues in place that allow individuals, whether it's a student or a family member, to voice a concern. And we encourage that. The other piece that we all need to understand is that the mandated reporting training and the expectations that we have for employees are clear. Every employee who works here, whether they are a leader, an administrator, if they're in any part of the organization, they are a mandated reporter. And what that means is they have an obligation to report if they have a concern about the safety or well-being of a student. Once those reports come in, it's immediately shared with the authorities. There's an investigation process that proceeds, and there's accountability as appropriate based on the findings of those investigations. So if there is a report, and we encourage reports if there's a concern, that we can take immediate action, and if necessary, make a personnel change. And we are not hesitant in the least to do that.
And in the time after this report scope,
the report, sorry to interrupt, Ed, but the report scope covers everything every year at the Academy.
Fair point.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. No. So let me rephrase. In the time since, let's say, 2020, when, you know, the reports received by the investigators happened to stop, have you had to activate those protocols?
Yes. The systems have worked. The systems have worked where a concern was identified, the institution was made aware, a report was made to the authorities, the investigation was conducted, and appropriate action was taken. So, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that if one of our employees as a mandated reporter comes forward with a concern, that we can investigate that. You know, the thing that you see in this report is the number of individuals who did not make a report, and perhaps the number of people within the institution that might have had some awareness, but based on societal norms, based on maybe the laws at the time, that they didn't say anything. And so those are the things that we can do right now. We can say, here are the avenues to report and to prevail on everyone in this organization to understand, if you see something, it's your obligation. There are criminal, civil, and professional consequences to not say something. And if I were a parent, or if a parent came to me and said, what should I be looking at in terms of the safety of sending my kid to any school, I would say, look at those two things. Are there avenues to report a concern? Can you do it in a protected way? And how deep are the mandated reporting obligations embedded in the training and culture of the institution?
Yeah. Okay, I've got one more question about a particular in the report, and then I want to ask you just about the institution today. And we've talked about that a little bit already, but
sure.
There's one case in here from the 1980s where an alum says that when he reported an incident, that he was shamed by an administrator for the sexual contact that occurred from the adult and told to leave the institution quietly or the school would tell his parents he was gay. Now, that was about 40 years ago. I'm wondering if Interlaken is also following up with administrators or other adults who might not have been the perpetrator of the misconduct, but are accused of things like that, enabling something or diminishing the impact or looking the other way, you know, all things that could cause more harm in a situation like this.
Thank you for that question. So the administrative team at Interlaken, as you would appreciate, has changed substantially over the decades. most of the staff and administrators who were here when the reported conduct took place are either deceased or no longer employed by Interlaken. And as part of the process, the investigative team had the latitude, which they took advantage of reaching out to past administrators to understand issues like the one that you raised. And that's important. And it's important that we highlight it in your reporting, is this is antithetical to how you respond to somebody who has voiced a concern. We consider ourselves to be a supportive, inclusive community. And it's appalling that that behavior existed. So I would add that I believe in this team. I believe in the integrity of those who are working for us and the care that they take to support our students, and that under the current law, any adult that fails to, make a report in a situation like that, there are severe consequences. So I can't speak to the cultural norms at Interlaken in the 1980s. I can say that there's a clear difference between the heartbreaking information that you just cited and the Interlaken of today.
This is a very exposing process for Interlaken to pay a law firm to come in and reveal as many problems as they could possibly find from the past.
Yep.
What were the conversations like among leadership about the value or the importance of not only having this investigation, but opening its findings up to the public?
I appreciate this question. As an educational institution, we think a lot about how what we do as an organization is a model for what we expect of our students. Our students are watching what we do. We undertook this report to understand and learn from our history, and that conveying quite visibly and in a painful way that reflection is an opportunity for growth. We see that as a model for our students and for other institutions that have issues that they need to confront. And as our alumni came forward and they had all these sobering accounts, that we can do the right thing. We can apologize for the harm that happened here, and we can do the right thing by sharing our commitment to get even better as an organization, to improve. And that, too, is a model for our students. Those are the standards that we hold for ourselves and the example that we hope to set for our community. If you've got an institution where you can't call out the things that are lacking, call out the things that need to be improved, you have real cultural problems. And so for the board to pretty decisively, after receiving this report from this courageous alumna from the 1970s, to initiate the report, it wasn't really a question. And when the decisions were made to expand the report to all academy years, when other additional alumni wanted to come forward, say, for the example you cited in the 80s, we encouraged and supported that. And when individuals came forward about instances from the camp, here again, we encouraged that because we want it. We want to know. Can't improve if we don't know. And again, this fundamentally comes back to how are we better tomorrow than we are today? And that's our obligation to our students. This report is very difficult. It's difficult to read. It's heartbreaking. It's painful. I feel for every alum who had this kind of experience here. It is not what we're about, but it will make us better. And for that, I'm deeply grateful to the alumni who came forward.
Last question, and it is about the way forward. Interlaken is, of course, heading into its centennial in 2028, and a lot is being made, I think, you know, rightly, about the history the institution has that's incredible and proud and worth celebrating. But this also looms now, and I'm wondering what the way forward is as you head toward a period of time where there will be a lot of reflection about the history of this place.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There are conflicting feelings in this moment about the beauty and the joy and the inspiration and the clear sentiment, deeply felt sentiment from many, many alumni that this institution changed their life for the better. And if I've heard that one time, I've heard it thousands of times. In some cases, alumni said that Interlaken saved them. In fact, that's even included in the report. So there is so much that is great about this place. I believe in this mission. I believe in the young people. I believe in what they are doing now and what they will do. And it's also true that the accounts in this report are terrible. They have no place in this institution or any other institution. And so we are celebrating what is great about this institution. We will do that, and we can hold that at the same time as we listen to and improve upon the past. That is a process that will continue. And as one alumna who came forward shared with me, she said, "This is the moment for Interlaken to reckon with what it has learned, and it's a moment to look ahead to an Interlaken that even more deeply understands the gravity of this and commits and resolves to be even better in its second century." We will absolutely do that. There is no question in my mind.
Trey Devi, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ed.
That is our full conversation with Trey Devi, president of Interlaken Center for the Arts. On our website, iprnews.org, we have more reporting about this story, a copy of the full report for you to see, and links to resources in case you or someone you know has experienced trauma from sexual abuse. Thank you for listening.